Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. We're going to jump right into the trivia aspect and what we left you with. So I will say this, I'm going to tease this just a bit. Obviously we're going to give you another trivia question at the end, but I'm urging you guys in the comment section, we don't want DMs, at least for this one. We're trying something. I promise you there is a method to the madness. It will be explained potentially next week or the next episode, at least when we reveal the answer to tonight's question. But you have to trust the process and go along with us and just humor me for at least this one. So when we reveal the question later, we want it in the comment section of the podcast, or if you guys want to just do it on the Instagram or Twitter account, Diamond Discussions 25, that is totally fine. We're just trying to spice it up just a little. With that being said, Joe, why don't you reveal the answer to the question itself, and did anyone get it right?
So last week's question was a pretty, you know, interesting question because the answers that we were getting the two answers correct, and a lot of people couldn't get the third answer of that question. So the question was, what three players have homered to get to their 3,000th hit? And we also asked you to add the team that they played for as well. So Derek Jeter and A-Rod did it for the Yankees, and Wade Boggs did it for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Now, like I said, most people were coming back with the A-Rod and Jeter. They were getting that right, but they were whiffing on Boggs. A good buddy of mine, my buddy LJ, he got all three right, but for some reason he thought A-Rod did it for Texas. So, unfortunately, he got that part wrong, but he got the all three players correct. So, we'll give him 75% for answering it correctly and incorrectly at the same time. But, yeah, so the answers are A-Rod for the Yankees, Jeter, obviously, for the Yankees, and Wade Boggs did it for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
So, look, I'll say this. Shout out LJ, because the main question was the three guys that did it. So, you got that part right. So, shout out to you. You were very close on the extra credit. But I just have one question, and I'm not trying to embarrass you. So, it's not along those lines, and I'll gladly embarrass myself by telling you the recording you're hearing right now is not the first one that we did to get this done. And guess what? It's all my fault. I gaffed beyond gaffed. So, maybe one day we'll put out a blooper show just based on me. And so far, I could tell you that it's longer than any episode we've released.
We've only got 5 hours worth of
just me spewing nonsense and saying the wrong thing and all that.
Yes, I don't feel bad. Trust me. You know,
yeah, I'm not trying to do that. But the question I have is, why did you think it was the Rangers? If he would have did it with the Rangers, this guy would have had close to 6,000 hits.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just curious how you got there. Maybe you brain farted or gaffed a little bit. Look, I do it too. Believe me, Joe, I could see him. He gets very frustrated with me that I do this because I screw up a lot. So there's no reason to be embarrassed. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. This could be a private thing. Get at me. Go through Joe, however you want to do it. Totally fine. Just out of curiosity. But look, guys, you see in the title of the episode how we're going to open this outside of trivia. It is still, as we're recording this, it is still April 15th. But, you know, so I would just like to say happy Jackie Robinson Day out there to everybody. Listen, he was a very special individual. He was a very special person to this game and honestly to our country's history. Honestly, given what he went through, he was a pioneer in his own regard to how he handled things and, you know, what he endured and what he had to go through. But Joe, I'm going to push it over to you. Why don't you introduce us a little bit to who Jackie Robinson was?
So there was two things that actually took me by surprise when it came to Jackie. I was reading an interview he had did while he was a Dodger, and the reporter had asked him what his other favorite, athletic activities were outside of baseball. And he said tennis, track and field, basketball, and football. But he said that football was actually his number one sport and that his least performing sport that he did the best in was baseball. He said it was the hardest one for him. And it's pretty funny considering he was a professional at it and a pretty darn good one.
Yeah.
But he said he played quarterback and safety as a football player. He loved basketball. He loved tennis. And the other thing was, I didn't know he served in the Army, in the United States Army. So shout out to him for that as well, serving our country. And listen, Jackie, he transcended so many things. He made everybody feel that we could live as one, no matter what the color of your skin was, no matter what your beliefs were. We could all be kind to each other, and we could also do things that we put our minds to. He was an inspiration in that sense as well. And it opened up the doors for so many things. And I think it's a beautiful story, you know, the whole Jackie Robinson story, the fact that he faced so much adversity and then was able to have a Hall of Fame career on top of that. It was only 10 or 11 seasons, you know, so you may not say, oh, that's not a big sample size, but the impact that he made, it really didn't matter how long he played. The impact he made left such a footprint on the game and the world. And like I said, you could teach your kids about him not even being an athlete. Just by the person he was, you could learn so much from him. So, you know, I think that baseball doing, you know, a Jackie Robinson Day is a phenomenal idea. It's been going on for a very long time. Everybody wearing 42 on their backs. It's a beautiful thing to see, and it shows that the league wants to keep his memory alive. And like I said, I think it's really beautiful.
Rightfully so. You know, obviously you guys watching the game today, you've taken notice. I'm sure maybe some of you out there with young kids, they're asking, why is everybody wearing 42 today? So that's always a fun question to answer for them. And it's, you know, it's maybe a little good history lesson. Listen, here's the deal though. We know he integrated baseball in 1947 on April 15th, obviously. He played for 10 years. And in that rookie season, he also won the Rookie of the Year, which obviously they ended up naming the award after him, which I think was good with him, and rightfully so.
Rightfully, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, just to say that he went through this, what he went through integrating the sport, and then was still able to win the award, I think was incredible. He also 2 years later won an MVP and a batting title in the same season, 1949. He was a six-time All-Star. He helped deliver a championship to Brooklyn in 1955, and that was one of six pennants that the Brooklyn Dodgers had won, you know, along with Jackie. So he was, you know, not only what baseball needed, and, you know, just to take away from his impact of the game and just at him highlight him as a baseball player just for a second, which I know that is difficult to do, but he was exactly what the Dodgers needed. You know, unfortunately they only won one championship with him, but they at least got one. They made it six times. They won the pennant six times. So I think just that was incredible in its own. And like I said, he was everything that the Dodgers needed, outside of just being a baseball player. And I think it was what the country needed. Outside of that, he was a .311 career hitter. He led the league in steals twice in 47 and 49. He also led the league in on-base percentage in 1952. You know, his list does go on. Incredible ball player, incredible person. You know, not only what he did for baseball and then what he did after baseball and used, I don't want to say platform, but maybe. I mean, there really wasn't, you know, like social media like that.
Like he created his own platform.
Yeah.
Just being at the center of something like this, you know, being the first to do what he did.
And, you know, the thing that jumps to me also, and it's, you know, it's not something you really think about, but, you know, going over this and just getting notes for him together, you know, like I watched a documentary on him this morning, you know, the civil rights movement didn't start until 1955. Jackie integrated baseball in 1947. He essentially did this alone.
And almost like before he ever got any help.
Yeah, you know, so he is maybe the catalyst, the pioneer in his own regard to maybe also help pushing the civil rights movement. You know, so I think that's even more incredible. I mean, just to add to his legacy, the fact that, like I said, 8 years before the civil rights movement officially began and you know, all that, he was essentially by himself. And, you know, in the, if you guys have seen it, if you haven't, you should, the movie 42, fantastic movie. There's a very powerful scene in that movie when, you know, Jackie's down, obviously, with everything that he's dealing with. And Branch Rickey, the guy who helped get him into baseball with the Dodgers, pretty much said, I don't need you to have strength to fight. I need you to have the strength not to fight back. Paraphrasing a little bit, but that was one of the more powerful scenes in that movie. I thought that was incredible because that it was exactly what he needed to be. And, you know, listen, what he might have done or thought and went through behind closed doors was, you know, completely different than what he presented on the field. So, I mean, just all in all, incredible movie. And the documentaries that are about him, there are some really good ones. Like I said, the one I watched on MLB Network, I believe it was Sincerely Jackie. Very good. It came out in 2011. There were some players involved in that. Joe touched on something a few minutes ago about the number 42. You know, everybody wears it now, but it wasn't until the 50th year anniversary of him integrating the sport that Bud Selig, the then commissioner, decided to retire the number 42 all across baseball. Now, you guys are saying, wait a minute, some of you that don't know, it was retired in 97, but Mariano Rivera retired way after that, and he wore number 42. Well, the thing that came with that was if you had already worn the number, if it was already yours, you were allowed to keep it for the length of your career. And then, you know, after you retired, that was it. So Mariano was essentially the last one officially to don the number himself, even though we do it every year on April 15th.
Right.
Now, the other side to that, on that 50th year anniversary, maybe the catalyst and the, you know, maybe the pioneer in his own sense of why we wear 42 now, Ken Griffey Jr., not only to add to his legacy as a baseball player, but again, his push for the right thing. He famously wore 24, as we all know. He wanted to swap his number and wear 42 on the day that it was announced that we were going to retire his number across baseball, which he did. 10 years later, in 2007, Griffey then wanted to do it again, but he did it a little differently. He called up Bud Selig. Now, this is from an interview he did with Howard Reynolds on the MLB Network. He, you know, said he had called up Selig. He said they had about a 10-minute conversation. He said, would it be possible if I could wear 42 on Jackie Robinson Day? And Selig said, is it okay if I call Rachel Robinson, Jackie's wife, and ask her if it's okay? Well, Selig ended up getting back to Griffey the next day, and he granted the request, but he also said that he would like to extend the offer to anyone willing to or wanting to wear the number to commemorate Jackie Robinson. And Griffey was through the roof, ecstatic, and said, the more the merrier. And
right. Hanging out with the number, I mean.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, if it's an open thing, I think it's a fantastic thing. I love that baseball does this. But also, Jackie Robinson Day wasn't official until 2004. So that's another little piece of history for you guys. Just, you know, like I said, it's fun to talk about this stuff. I love the history of the game, you know, and
that's important history. It's important history that everybody should know. Like I said, if you're as big as baseball lovers as me and Mike are, you should know the history of Jackie Robinson and what he went through, the things he endured, how, you know, he was able to get to the big leagues and the career he had going through all that anxiety and pressure and adversity. It's really remarkable. And everybody should know just a little bit about Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, and you know what? Even MLB The Show, the video game, does a fantastic job with this. For the last few years, they have come out what is called storylines. And basically, you do little moments and little highlights of some guys' careers. And they've mainly focused and spotlighted it on a lot of players from the Negro Leagues. And I think that is an incredible thing that they do. You know, it's like a little movie and history lesson while you play the game at the same time. You know, it's a fantastic thing. If you guys have not checked that out, if you've not played the video game, even just for those reasons, just to get that little history lesson while you play a video game, you know, I think is awesome and a very cool thing to do. But I have to share something that I find not funny in a sense. It's just how this all played out. It was not something I expected. So I want to say like 2 years ago, me and my wife made a deal because she's a huge Scooby-Doo person and she nonstop watches Scooby-Doo. And I was starting to lose my mind. Like, listen, I love Scooby-Doo too, but I don't love it as much as she does. And, you know, it was like nonstop. So listen, we have to make a deal. I want you to sit down with me and at least once a month or as much as we can, once every 2 months, whatever it is, I want to watch a baseball movie with you. And I want you to watch some of the movies I grew up watching, because you pound Scooby-Doo in my head. Like, I don't need it, because I didn't watch Scooby growing up. listen, I showed her some of the good ones. Obviously, Field of Dreams, 61, and 42 was one of them. Now, she didn't really know much about Jackie Robinson other that he was the first African-American to, you know, play Major League Baseball in the modern era. And as we're watching the movie, you know, I'm not expecting this because I know a lot of Jackie's story and, you know, everything like
that. Right.
Someone who doesn't. We're maybe halfway through the movie and I look over at her and she's actually crying. Again. Really? Yeah. And I'm like, no way. And I'm looking and I'm like, I said, babe, are you crying? And she goes, no. And I'm like, yeah, you are.
You're
growing. No, listen, not to embarrass her, babe. I'm gonna get a lot of flack for telling this story. Just letting you know. But anyway, she goes, no. I said, come on, what's going on? And she goes, she just looks at me and she goes, is this like really what he went through? Like, and I said, could I be honest with you? The movie is being nice.
Yeah.
Compared to reality.
Absolutely.
You know, there obviously was some real stories in there and it was awful. Some of the, how that went down, but you know, like I said, the movie was being nice. And, you know, again, for me or you, or the baseball fans out there that know his story, it may not hit you as hard as it would hit somebody that really doesn't know, you know, like I said, my wife knew one fact. She didn't think about everything that he had to endure and deal with. And she's seeing it in that movie. It got to her, you know.
And most people don't realize what he went through and how bad it was. You know what I mean? Like, it's just something that they've never witnessed, A, you know, and B, they wouldn't have expected someone else to go through. So when you watch that, yeah, it's kind of the nice version of what he went through. It's just kind of like a generic version of what he potentially went through as a player and a person. But I'm sure it was a lot worse than what the movie 42 depicts.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So, I thought that was interesting. It was something that since this happened, I think it was about 2 years ago that I showed her that movie. And I always just remembered that and always stuck in my head. And you know what? I have a little platform to tell this story, regardless of whether she has no idea that I'm doing this. So it's going to be a lot of fun when I get either that phone call, that death stare of me telling this story, because you know, you can't tell a story about your wife crying on a podcast. You can't do that. But guess what? I just did. So I guess I embarrassed myself twice tonight, and I'll let you guys know the reaction to that. But look, I will say this. Jackie is one of the most important parts of our game, one of the most important pieces of our history. There are a lot of players that we may not have or not know of if it wasn't for him. So my respect always goes out to him and his family. Loved what he did, loved the type of player he was, and just how strong he really was as a person, because what he would endure, again, I will beat this into the ground. What he went through was unreal, and it's unfathomable in this day and age, and you know, the way that we think and the way we were brought up, you know.
Right. And it's going to be a story I tell my son when he gets older, just to show him how people were treated differently for no reason, literally no reason. And yeah. Just to show him the compassion side of how human beings can be, and how we're supposed to accept everybody as one. And it doesn't matter what you look like, what your skin color is. It has nothing to do with anything. It's all about being a good person at the end of the day, no matter what you look like. And you can make a difference by being, you know, such a person. So, like I said, it doesn't even matter that he was a baseball player in the sense that he already taught life lessons. You don't even have to tell your loved ones, your kids, that he was a baseball player. You could literally teach them how to live their lives through how Jackie lived. You know what I mean? And then you could explain to them, like, yeah, they were an athlete as well, and they had to endure other things from being an athlete as well. So it's a story that'll never, ever go unrecognized.
No, absolutely not. And last little tidbit on this before we move on to some other topics. We had a friend of ours out in Chicago who was at the White Sox game today, and he, in a group text, texted us and said that there was a father-son duo sitting in front of them, And he said the kid was maybe about 8 or 9 years old and asked his father, who was Jackie Robinson? Like, I'm going to be honest. So you're a dad. I'm a new dad. You know, we're both new dads relatively. As long as my son is a baseball fan, or even if he's not, I can't wait to get that question.
Right.
I really can't wait. And I think it was awesome. That whole moment, that was cool. It would have been cool if our buddy would have got that on camera or something. That would have been nice. But who knew the kid would say that? But, you know, it's just things like that. Like that, that's awesome. That's like, that's a scene out of a movie. You know? So I can't wait to, you know, hopefully have that conversation with my son in the future and yours as well. I think it's going to be fun. But listen, guys out there listening, I push this on you nonstop, and I'm going to keep doing it. I don't care how annoying it gets. In the comments section of the podcast itself or on the post connected to this actual episode on Instagram or Twitter, Diamond Discussions 25, give us your thoughts, give us some memories, give us some facts, give us anything, anything regarding this day. As long as that goes, and the impact of Jackie Robinson, maybe your favorite stat about him, whatever it may be, throw it in our comments section. We love to see it. We love to read it. As nerds of baseball and history as the game goes, we love this type of stuff. We love these type of conversations. So, you know, we would obviously love to hear your thoughts on the matter as well. But we are going to move on into some other topics.
We're going from number 42 to number 22 now.
You know, I promised you guys something, and I guess I'm not a man of my word, although I try to be. I said that we weren't going to do this again.
But no. You know what? We did keep our promise. Let's not to cut you off, but okay. We did keep our promise. It's the media, the legal mafia, as they call them, that really set this off. Okay, so I'm sorry if I was cutting into your segue but it's really got me going, and I told you it makes my blood boil, because we've got reports from John Heyman saying that he misses Judge. Like, where did he say that he missed Judge? So, just to get into the quote, Mr. Juan Soto was asked what he thinks is going on differently when it comes to his early struggles, if you want to call them struggles, and how he thinks his approaches are being taken at the plate. So he had said that he had the best hitter in the world hitting behind him, so pitches are attacking him differently, and he's seeing different pitches in the strike zone. What is so wrong about that? It's basically an honest answer. But, of course, the media took it and ran with it, and they're saying that he dissed Pete Alonso, he misses being a Yankee, he misses Aaron Judge. Where are they getting any of that from? Sal Licata went on another rampage rant, and it's got to stop now, and all this stuff. And guys, just let it be.
How about some of your colleagues stop it now?
No one ever compared Pete Alonso to Aaron Judge.
No,
it's a debate that's not even up for debate. If we could settle it that way. What Juan Soto said was literally the truth. If people don't like the truth, then don't ask questions that you may get a truthful answer. Now, if you want to take Juan Soto to the side and say, hey, kind of sugarcoat your answer for me, maybe he'll do that for you next time. But the man, for the most part, answers his questions honestly. And it's getting to the point now where even Aaron Judge had to get asked after the Royals game how he felt about the comments. And he's like, I'm not going there. He's like, he's got Pete Alonso to hit behind him. You don't have to worry about me. You don't have to worry about Juan. You don't have to worry about Pete. They're all good with their situation. But it's getting ridiculous to the point where the media now is kind of the ones driving the bus on this, if you will.
Yeah. So if I can, Heyman was the first that I saw of this. Obviously, this was an interview, I believe, with the New York Post. This is driving me crazy, and here's the reality. To John Heyman to come out and say that Juan Soto misses Aaron Judge is just, like, so disingenuous, and I think, honestly, utterly ridiculous, because again, like you said, when did he actually say that? When did he actually say that? He gave a fact about the situation at hand for him and what is necessarily different, because he did relatively start the year off hot and Aaron Judge didn't. But that doesn't matter whether Aaron Judge is hitting 084 or 440. You're still going to approach him the same, and it's not to throw the ball anywhere that he can crush it.
Right.
And not pitch to him regardless of how hot or cold he is. That's the reality. Here's another reality. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in our game right now, and it's not up for debate. Those comments were not a shot at Pete Alonso.
No.
The fact that the media is twisting this into that, the fact that all these people are losing their minds over it, and essentially what it seems like, clickbait or rage bait in this, you know, in the way this is going in this world, this is what obviously sells. This is what is going to make people read. And it's incredibly disingenuous, in my opinion, because how could you cover it this way? That's not the reality. And the other piece of it is, too, fans, media will tear a guy down if he's not honest, or at least seems like he's not being honest or being vague with his answers. And then when the guy is honest with his answers, you still tear him apart. So right. Regardless, it is a lose-lose situation. I could respect the fact that Soto is being honest and not changing who he is and saying how he feels and thinks. I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with some of the people that are covering this. It is honestly ridiculous between, seeing posts and Instagrams and TikToks and everything. Oh, I guess Juan Soto misses Aaron Judge. No, he doesn't. Maybe he does. I don't know. It doesn't matter because it's not the reality of the situation. And he never actually said those words. So that is ridiculous. But you could put Juan Soto in front of Aaron Judge. You could put Trent Grisham in front of Aaron Judge. You could probably put Anthony Rendon in front of Aaron Judge. And they're going to hit. They're going to get pitches to hit. So to do that and twist this story around, because this is New York media for you, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and like I
honestly
said,
ridiculous.
And I was listening to a bunch of people, BT and Sal Licata. They were ripping him apart, saying it's a bad look. You left one New York team to come to the next, and it kind of looks like you still have a little bit of feelings for the Yankees. I mean, he gave Judge props for being the talent that he is. Why is that such a big deal? I'm a Yankee fan. I'm taking that as a compliment to Aaron Judge. It's nothing to take away from Juan Soto. I don't know why people are getting so mad at him for the quote that he gave. Because like you just said earlier, if he would have gave a vanilla answer, a very generic answer, they would have said, oh, he's beating around the bush. And they would have accused him anyway of missing the Yankees or probably missing Aaron Judge. It would be the same thing. So even with him saying it now and him going out there and saying, I had the best hitter in baseball hitting behind me, and they're pitching me a little bit differently. Yeah, because Pete Alonso isn't Aaron Judge. That was never a debate.
And it's no disrespect to Pete or his season right now.
Right, and John Heyman, he also is to blame because he took with that and ran with it.
Yeah.
And he basically put words in Juan Soto's mouth that he misconstrued, because Soto never said, yeah, you know, I miss hitting in front of Judge. Now, if you would have said that, I'd say that's a little weird.
Yeah.
That's a little concerning.
Rightfully so for everybody to go after him for that.
But that's not what he said. He said, yeah, last year I had the best hitter in the game hitting behind me. So pitchers are attacking me differently. What? Now we're gonna get on him for that too?
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It's getting ridiculous. And it's only going to fuel the Fairweather fans to come out of the woodwork
and just spew nonsense.
I
mean, that's going to happen regardless, and that's fine.
Juan also has to say, I will say this, even though it's an honest answer, right? We're saying it's an honest answer. He has to be careful with how he words his questions here in New York.
Listen, he knows that. He played with the Yankees last year. I'm sure he knows.
But he didn't run into situations like that because it was just different.
Well, he also didn't, you know.
He left the Padres. He was traded from the Padres. It wasn't like he left the Mets to come to the Yankees. It wasn't like he picked us in free agency.
Well, I mean, not for nothing.
It was a whole different situation.
if I can, even when he spoke his mind and spoke the truth at the end of last season and basically said he's going to listen and let everybody be available to him. If
people got mad at that too.
People got mad at that, but other players have done that. Yeah. Basically, Kyle Tucker kind of did that within the last week or so, if I'm not mistaken. I think we covered that as well. The other aspect of it too is he gave you full frontal. Everybody is open. I'm open to anybody willing to, you know, sit down and this and that. I'm available for all 30 teams. And then you're mad that he left. He told you he was available for everybody. So it seems like you guys want to pick and choose when you want to listen to this guy. And when you do listen, you twist the words. And when you don't listen, you're mad that he jumped ship. I'm air quoting. But it's ridiculous. And I'll be honest with you, not only to just tear down some of the bogus reports that we've seen, my favorite one, and this is a good one, and this is how it should be covered in my opinion, was actually from Evan Roberts, WFAN. Kudos to him. He said, this is a nothing burger. He said nothing wrong. He's not miserable as a Met.
Yeah.
Guys, get over this. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. If you guys want to cover things asinine, then you're just giving us more fuel to make content about and talk about on our podcast. So, listen, by all means, if you guys want to make bogus statements and put out bogus stuff and just run with clickbait and rage bait, by all means, have fun. We'll be here. We'll be here to mop it up and set the record straight, if you will, because somebody's got to do it.
And I'm one of these Yankee fans that's looking at it like, now it's is that going to be a bad look for us? Like, are they going to start saying, like, they're going to turn on Yankee fans and say, yeah, you see? You know what I mean? Like, oh, he misses the Yankees and all this stuff. And they're going to look at it as Yankee fans may actually believe that. And I don't want them to believe that.
Right.
He never came out and said any of that.
No.
Like I said, if you want to take somebody literal, he literally never said that.
So for
it's very simple. It's very simple to squash it and say, yeah, that's not what he said. Move on. All he said was is that he had Aaron Judge hitting behind him, who's arguably the best hitter in baseball. And guess what? That's not a lie, guys.
It's not, and that's coming from me as well.
It's a fact.
Let's be real here for a second. Like, let's be real here for a second. It is what it is. That's the reality. Of course, pitching is different for him right now.
I feel like,
of course, they're going after him differently right now.
Right, and I just feel like it's not going to stop. They're going to find something every time. There's going to be a new situation that arises where they're going to compare it to his time as a Yankee, and the fact that he only played there for a year, you would think the so many comparisons that people have made, you would think that he was a Yankee for at least 5 to 7 years.
You would think this was Derek Jeter leaving the Yankees and going to the Mets after a 15-year career. Like, right, come you, on, get right, a grip.
You would think that he was a Yankee for, like I said, like 7 years.
Like, this is a joke at this point. Really, get a grip. It's laughable.
And the media to me is now the number one culprit, because they'll ask him a generic question. He gives
a leading question. Cause that's what that was.
He gives a, I don't know if it was so much leading. He just answered it honestly. He answered it honestly. They said, what do you contribute your recent struggles to? It's a general question. He just answered it honestly with facts.
You're right.
He answered it with facts. He still answered it with facts, but now look, now the other side of the media, the John Haymans, the Sal Licatas, the BTs, they all ripped him. They all ripped him. And listen, I have much respect for Licata and BT. They run a great show. I'm not taking anything away they do. Obviously, I've disagreed with a lot of things that Sal says. But it's all fun and professionalism at the end of the day. But they really ripped Soto today again. And Sal was like, he's got to get over it. He can't be thinking about, you know, who was sitting behind him last year. It was only a year. BT was like, it's got to end. I mean, what did he say? He gave props to Aaron Judge.
Right. What's wrong with that?
If anything should be looked at, it should be looked at he gave props to a Yankee that he played with.
But that's not what we're living in now. And like you said too, you know, to Heyman's quote, because obviously you see Heyman, that's you know, not a lot of people outside of New York really know Sal Licata all that well. But the whole baseball world knows who John Heyman is. You know, so when they see that tweet, and, you know, a lot of people don't do their due diligence and maybe read the article or whatever the case is, that's fine. But when they see his tweet and it's basically saying that, you know, looks like Juan Soto misses Aaron Judge. One, he could have went back there. Two, the lineup around Soto isn't all that bad. None of that was said.
Right.
None of that was said. And it's just when a player gives you a vague answer, that is why.
And I agree with that 1,000%. And I just don't understand why a guy, especially like John Heyman, would take a story and kind of put blemishes on it and try to make it look like it was something that it wasn't. Because literally in his article, it said Juan Soto makes comments about potentially missing Aaron Judge. Like, where did he – why would you do that? You know what I mean? Like, you basically took words that he said – and you completely did a 180 with them and misconstrued them and turned them into something it wasn't. It's very rage baity. It's clickbaity. It looks shady. It causes debate that winds up into full blown arguments that don't make sense. And it, to me, it's just got to stop. The media has to stop bashing this guy for telling the truth.
Yeah, it's honestly ridiculous. You know, and look, if I'm being honest, from what I've seen from him so far, in the first, 16 games it's been, you know, my personal opinion, he's just not barreling the ball right now. It's really it. He's a little underneath or above some of these pitches. And when he starts barreling up, then what? When he gets hot, then what? You're going to tell me there hasn't been a stretch in Soto's career where over a 16-game period he only hit 250, but he's been on base 95% of the time. His on-base percentage is over 400, still hitting 250, 150 points over that, you know. So he's never hit 250 for a stretch of 16 games or beyond. You know, that's never happened because, you know, I guess Juan Soto is the greatest baseball player ever made. But I digress. Look, guys, look, reality is I would love to sell you on the whole comment about this and comment about that, given this certain topic. I don't even want to do that with this specific topic. If you guys want to, by all means, you know where to go. I say it 1,000 times. You guys could probably recite it in your sleep at this point. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on the matter? If you want to give them to us, by all means, that's cool. If you don't, you don't. You're over it like we are. If you can't tell in our voices that we are over this because
they force us to talk about it because it's too big of a thing not to talk about.
Right, because you know what? I'm going to call a spade and I'm going to appreciate the fact that he said something honest and then you have the media blatantly twisting it right in front of your eyes. Like, it's incredible to me. It really is. It
really makes no sense how they can turn the situation into something so bad. So
I'm going to do it over a guy. I mean, not for nothing, John Heyman, you're a guy that you still haven't gotten over the backlash. You've gotten over the arson Judge tweet. You flipped out on WFAN for it. I mean, dude, you should have embraced this. You should have showed up to work to work the next day with an arson Judge t-shirt and laughed about it. Not be getting mad at this. Like, it's a joke. You mistyped. However, it was a typo, bro. We get it. It's funny. You know, I'm sure you get ragged on for it, but like, dude, embrace it at this point. Like, whatever. But you're going to be disingenuous at the same time. I find that hilarious. But like I said, guys, comment section if you want. I don't even want to do it because I don't want the clickbait. I don't want to come off clickbaity with this whole situation. But
no, we're not the ones clickbaity. I can say that with
confidence. I'm trying to tell the truth.
We're covering what these writers and these journalists and what they do. You know, we're basically covering what they say and how ridiculous they make themselves look like. So we're breaking down facts. We're never going to be rage baity or click baity. We break down facts. We offer facts. And then when we see things like this, we analyze it and dissect it because it's utterly ridiculous. As a Yankee fan, I think it's pathetic. I see what the media is doing. It's causing more of a divide between Yankees and Mets fans. And we only play each other 6 times a year, but they act like, you know, you or I's teams are going to, you know, matter in getting us division titles. No, it doesn't. The Mets and the Yankees don't affect each other getting into the playoffs, but we're literally making Juan Soto out to be the end-all, be-all, and it just doesn't have to be that way. Let the guy play. Let him do his thing. Stop making comments. When he makes comments, take them as they are and keep it going. That's all you have to do.
It's really not that hard. It's really not that hard. And like I said, we're just trying to, you know, bring the truth to the matter and maybe right some of the wrongs that have been reported on the situation. And this is me as a Met fan, you as a Yankee fan. Neither one of us have an issue with what he said because he was being honest. I've said it before on the show, and I will say it again. I appreciate the worst truth over the best lie. And
absolutely.
Especially when a guy's being vague. You know, we want to see them open up a little more and be a little more honest. You know, obviously we love that, you know, with the players when they're more in tune with the fans and you know, with the media, and you get a little backstory with them. And this is probably why, these are reasons why some of these players don't do these things. So, I just think it's ridiculous.
I can't even blame them anymore. Like, I know we're saying, yeah, if they give the vague answer, it kind of looks like they're lying. No, maybe they just don't want to
get
criticized for telling the truth.
Yeah,
because they know, you know what, even if I tell the truth, I'm going to get criticized. So let me give a vanilla answer.
Yeah, why not? Why not? But listen, kudos to Soto and being honest, and respects to him on that matter.
And I'm not just saying this as a Yankee fan, but kudos to Judge for kind of deflecting it.
Yeah, I thought that was good. I like the way he handled that.
They asked him for no reason. They just won a big game. They just won a series against Kansas City, which is a potential playoff team. Max Fried looked great, and that's one of the questions you ask him. What do you think about the comments about Juan Soto? He's like, we just won a baseball game. Like,
right.
What, like, he's like, Juan's doing fine. Juan's going to be Juan. And he's got Pete hitting behind him. So he's in a good spot. And I'm just happy that Judge knows better and knows what the media is about.
Well, Joe, I'll let you. You brought it up. So I'd like to, maybe move on from this, because it's just, I'm so tired of it. And so, disgusted by it, but so how did your Juan Soto-less Yankees do today? And over the weekend, at least
my Juan Soto-less Yankees did perfectly fine the last two nights. They're beating up on the Royals. They've won the series, so they're going for the sweep for Game Three. Max Fried looked excellent: 6 2/3, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 7 Ks. He tried to tell Boone that he was, good to go to finish the inning. Yeah, he ran into some trouble in the seventh there, but Boone took the ball, which I thought was the good idea because it looked like Fried was kind of laboring there, but Fried did want to go. So I commend him on wanting to, finish it out and then finish the seventh inning. Judge went 2 for 3 with a walk. He's hitting .381 over the course of the 17 games. And Jason Dominguez, another good stint in left field. Made some tough plays, made the regular plays look easy, which is good. He was 3 for 3 with an RBI double, bases clearing double that capped off a 4-run sixth inning. It gave the Yankees the lead, actually, as well. My only thing about this whole night was that he was taken out in the seventh inning for defense. But the report was he actually, on the backswing, on his RBI double that actually cleared the bases, the backswing hit him in the face, and his helmet kind of, went over his face a little bit and fell to the ground. Aaron Boone said he didn't want to take him out, but he had to because he lost his contacts.
Oh, my God.
So he actually had trouble seeing. He didn't have a backup pair, and Boone was forced to take him out. So I'm sitting here cursing, screaming, yelling, why is he coming out? He needs to be in these situations. He needs the experience. He's had a great night. That supposedly is the report that I read, that Dominguez literally hit himself in the helmet. The helmet knocked out his contacts. He didn't have a backup pair. Playing defense was probably not the best idea. So Boone replaced him for Grisham. So that was my take for the evening. And shout out to Grisham. Made another phenomenal play in center field.
He did. I saw that.
Saving at least a double. So it's really good to see that the Yankees are playing some defense. And hopefully Dominguez can finish a full nine-inning game and have his contacts in, because I would like to see this kid finish a game. He did great. He, like I said, he looks really poised at the plate. He has a great eye. He could get on via the walk as well. And he has speed. He's a big guy with speed. So I just really want to see this guy do good. That's really what I want to see. It's just he, could prosper and flourish as our left fielder.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to do my best John Heyman impression and say that Aaron Boone lied. The contacts thing never happened, and they took him out for defense. Why not?
Tomorrow we're going to wake up and we're going to see Jason Dominguez has been deemed blind by medical staff.
Yeah, maybe. but just on Jason a little bit, Jason Dominguez, you know, there has been obviously the other day in a very strange situation. He was pinched hit for it. Jason Dominguez is a switch hitter facing a lefty. They took him out of the game to put Cody Bellinger in to face a lefty, lefty on lefty. Now, Bellinger does fairly well against lefties. That's fine, neither here nor there. But you have a kid who he's also struggling from the right side of the plate. You and I had the pleasure of joining a few friends of ours this morning. Yes. Our buddy Hector, our girl Grace, Yankees Morning Brew. We were on that show this morning, and we spoke about this, and I came up with a crazy take that I'm sorry, I could see it happening. If this is the trend and you're not going to let this kid fight through his struggles from the right side of the plate, to me, I don't think it's something that's going to happen during the season. It's going to be an off-season move. Jason Dominguez will be a primary left-handed hitter come next year.
Which is it would be a travesty, honestly. It would be a disservice to him. The Yankees are so lefty heavy right now. They could use a right-handed hitter, and he would be the right-handed hitter that you could play every day in left. He would be getting, you know, exponentially better every day defensively, and he could give you power from both sides of the plate. And yes, he's a better left-handed hitter, absolutely, but he should be able to hit lefties from the right side of the plate. And tonight, he actually had that three-run double from the right side of the plate.
Yeah.
So he obviously could do it. It's not something that he can't do. We have to get the reps in. He has to get enough reps in to feel comfortable, to get comfortable, face good right-handed pitching. Left-handed pitching, to the point where he could go up to the right side, and it's almost like he's hitting from the left side anyway. My thing with the whole Bellinger thing for pinch hitting for him, Bellinger missed that game with a bad back. Why are we putting Cody Bellinger out there?
Yeah, that made no sense.
I just didn't understand it. I really didn't. And you put a lefty up there as well. Like I said, like you said earlier, Mike, he does hit lefties pretty well, but that wasn't the time for Bellinger to be hitting against the lefty.
No.
You pulled him off the bench. He's at a faulty back, and you pulled him off the bench to hit against the lefty?
No.
I just didn't get it. If you were going to put Bellinger in, what you should have did was have Peraza maybe come pinch hit to be the right-handed bat, and then you could pinch hit up substituted Bellinger for Peraza.
Could have done that for defense.
And you could add Bellinger in the outfield. Peraza gets his one at bat. He gets benched for the game, and you got Bellinger in left. Instead, they put Bellinger in to swing a bat with a bad back from the left side of the plate facing a lefty. I didn't agree with that.
Yeah, I could definitely I'd be frustrated. So that obviously is not an encouraging thing, but he followed up tonight. Like you said, he got the three-run double from the right side of the plate. So, you know, if the trend goes that way, maybe I'll be wrong. But if they're going to keep doing this and tinkering with him in ways that I don't agree with, you obviously don't agree with it either. Maybe it could be headed that way. I mean, more recently, Cedric Mullins did that. He came up as a switch hitter, and he now primarily hits from the left side.
Right.
But listen, Yankee fans listening, what are your comments? What are your thoughts on this Jason Dominguez thing? What are your thoughts on Max Fried? Are you happy with how he looked? I don't know how you couldn't be, because he looks
fantastic. Just to highlight another thing, he's 3-0 with a 1.88 so far.
He looks fantastic.
He's doing everything we want him to and need him to, honestly.
And he is anchoring your staff right now in such a huge way when you guys need it more than ever. He's doing his job. He understands the assignment. He is handling business. This is the professional. This is the guy that you signed to this monster contract. He's performing.
And we're getting Clark Schmidt back tomorrow, too. So that's a huge thing. Clark Schmidt comes back tomorrow to finish out the Royal Series. So hopefully he can stay healthy and round out the back end of the rotation for the Yankees as well.
Yeah, and give you guys a little some sense of stability back there between, you know, you kind of know what you're going to get from Cookie or not. I know his last start, he looked great. Start before that, he got roughed up a little bit. Stroman has been an atrocity. I'm sure you guys are going to be happy to get rid of him when the time comes. But guys, again, Yankee fans in the comment section, Instagram or Twitter, whichever one you prefer, or the comment section of the podcast. Give us your thoughts. We want to hear from you. If I can move on a little bit to the Mets, listen, they didn't end up pulling out the win out in Minnesota tonight. You know what? I'll be honest. Lindor took a lot of heat for this, and he put it on himself. He made a crucial error in the third inning of the game. Essentially, two runs ended up coming in because of it on that play particularly. And then the next batter up in the inning hit a single to center field right in front of Taylor. On the relay, Taylor threw into third base, ended up taking the run out. They got out of the inning, but essentially two runs had scored when the inning should have been over. You know, now Lindor is taking this blame for tonight's loss like he took a few weeks ago when he had that two-error game, and that seemed to have cost the Mets in that aspect. So, you know, Lindor has committed four errors so far this season, which I don't think he got to until like the 64th game of last season or 46th, somewhere in that range, I believe. I think it was 64th. Forgive me for not having that on the spot for you guys. But, you know, look, you could put it on Lindor. Lindor could take the heat for it if he wants to. That's fine. Look, at the end of the day, Tyler McGill pitched tonight. I don't think he looked bad. He's been unbelievable. I think the Mets were 9-0 in his starts leading up to tonight. Listen, all streaks are meant to be broken, so it is what it is. But he still didn't look bad. It's not like he got annihilated. He pitched five innings, gave up eight hits, four runs, two of them earned, and struck out three. And Max Kranick finally got hit up a little bit. You know, so other than that, I'm really not too upset with how things went. Shout out Soto and Alonso, both homer tonight. Soto in back-to-back games. Alonso has been tearing the cover off of the ball. He understands the assignment, hitting behind Juan Soto, and he is thriving with that. So, you know, obviously we love to see it. As far as the lineup goes, obviously also in Mets news, Jose Siri is going to miss some time. He fouled the ball off his leg and has a fractured tibia.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah. Listen, at the end of the day, look, he hasn't been hitting, hasn't been doing the Siri things. He's been playing great defense, and he has been electric on the base pads, you know, stealing a couple of runs here and there. In that aspect, he's been great. It's an unfortunate situation, the platoon that would have been with him and Tyrone Taylor out in center field. As far as the roster moves with that goes, it's a little undecided where they might go. I know Luis Angel Acuna was asked about playing center field because he can. He's done it in the minor leagues. And he pretty much gave the answer you want to hear from a young kid. If that's where I need to go, I'll go. And that's great.
And that's good.
He has been electric the last like five games. I believe he's hitting over 400. He has been the spark plug at the back end of that lineup right now, maybe making up for what Brett Beatty is not doing, and they're somewhat platooning at second, and it seems Acuna is now taking this and running with it, as he should. It should have been one of them, whichever one's deciding to do it until McNeil gets back. And now with Siri out, you know, maybe Acuna still finds some playing time. Also potentially maybe to give Vientos a rest at third. You know, put Acuna's glove there, or Beatty if he's – however that's going to play out, we'll see. But as of right now, the series is tied 1-1. They're going to figure that out tomorrow, and hopefully this lasts. But the Mets are the only team in Major League Baseball as of right now to have not lost back-to-back games. So hopefully we keep that going and come back with a win tomorrow. It was supposed to be Griffin Canning tomorrow, but – they have pushed back his start. He apparently due to an illness. He's just feeling weak. That was words from Mendoza. So he's not going to go tomorrow. They're going to go with Justin Hegeman. So that's our starter for tomorrow. Listen, it is what it is.
Hey, listen, next lineup mentality. That's basically what you have right now.
That's all it is. We'll see how this plays out. We'll see how this goes tomorrow. Hopefully he has a great start. The Mets play at 1 o'clock. So, you know, maybe you guys have listened to us before you heard the Met game, or you watched the game already and then listened to us. Either way, it is fine. Listen, like I said, Soto has hit home runs in back-to-back games. I'll be honest. So the first game of this Twin Series yesterday, I liked what I saw even before he hit the home run. He seemed to get barrel to ball. It's just the timing was off. So he's progressing. I'm not worried about Soto hitting 250 in the first 16 games or 17 games of the season. Not worried about it. I'll be honest with you. I'm just not. Just like Yankee fans weren't worried when Aaron Judge was hitting like a buck 40 last year at some point in April. It's Aaron Judge. It's Juan Soto. We know what these guys are. They've done it for a fairly decent amount of time. Not worried about it. And if 250 with a 400 on base percentage is bad, okay, I'll take bad then. That's fine. He's been on base, like I said, like 95% of the game. So,
and that's the other thing Met fans have to think about as well. He literally, sometimes he's been going 0 for 3. I've noticed that 0 for 2. But those 0 for 2, 0 for 3 nights, he's still getting on base twice by walking.
And he's scoring runs because Alonso's driving him in. So,
yeah, I know it's not the sexy way of getting on, but getting on is getting on.
This is what he brings to the table.
Right.
Him, it's not just a home run. It's not just, like you said, the sexy thing. This is right. What he brings.
Him getting on base is the key, and that's what you want. You want players on the bases. That's how you score runs. So just everybody take it easy. He'll be fine. Just
relax.
The power will eventually show up. The RBI production is going to show up, and the average is not going to be at 240, 250. It's going to be in the high 280s, high 290s, and everybody's going to be fine. And they'll all forget about him playing like this in the next 2 months.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, the offense is coming around here and there. Vientos is starting to hit a little bit. He's putting together better at-bats, I'll say that much, compared to what the mess that he looked like in the first week and a half. You know, that was pretty bad. Beatty, on the other hand, I know he tripled on Sunday against the Athletics, but outside of that, really hasn't been much production. I'm sure this kid might be in his own head at this point. Hopefully he finds a way out of it because we could use another bat. Also, Francisco Alvarez started another rehab game today. Hit a home run. That's always encouraging. So he'll be making his way back soon. Be great to see him maybe another week or so at most. You know, so obviously it'd be nice to get him back with the pitching staff, get his bat back in the lineup, and see the improvements that he was making in spring. Let's see him put this to the test now in an actual major league game. So, you know, for Met fans, that's exciting. And Sean Manaea started resuming throwing, obviously encouraging. We're going to see again how this plays out because we went down this road in the last couple of weeks, and he got shut down for about two. So we're progressing. We're getting our health back in a sense. I know we just lost Siri, but, you know, there are some bright spots. We got some of the cavalry and reinforcements are coming. Obviously, Manaea is going to be a huge part of this rotation. And listen, you know what? The rotation has been fantastic. The bullpen has been fantastic outside of, I think they're second in the league in ERA with the bullpen. The rotation is still, believe, in first place throughout Major League Baseball with their ERA. Who would have thought this group of jobbers would have pulled this together? I love it. It just goes to my point and shows my confidence in Jeremy Hefner and that pitching program over there in Queens and why I'm so confident and why I'm so optimistic and not doing the Sal Licata and saying that this is an atrocious rotation, blah, blah, blah. We all heard that episode.
They're going to win 97 games.
Yeah.
Rotation.
This is my optimism, and this is my reason why. This is what this man brings to this table. Like I said, he's in the past, he has survived three manager changes for a reason.
Right. Or you could be like BT and say, you know, that it's the pitching is not good and all this stuff. And yeah, well, it's been good. So,
you know, that would have been, we did a disservice. This would have been a really fun April Fool's episode if we would have just got on here, did an April Fool's thing and just said atrocious, outrageous stuff. I thought it would have been fantastic.
Well, but and to go back a little bit, BT was actually saying that, you know, the Mets schedule has been kind of soft. Okay, very true. But shouldn't you be beating these teams?
Yeah.
Because if you weren't beating these teams, you'd be trashing them just as much.
It's just you can't make people happy.
It's the same thing for the Yankees or any other team. If you're playing a team that's not as good, you should be beating them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how well you've pitched or how well you've hit. You should be beating on the weaker competition. And everyone says, oh, you played the Marlins six times. So what? They're on the schedule. You have to play them.
And if they were losing.
It is what it is. Like, your next series is the Cardinals. Yeah, they're 8-9. They've probably overperformed a little bit. Nobody expected them to be close to 500, but you still got to play them. What happens if you lose 2 out of 3? Is that something bigger to talk about?
Of course.
The same thing for the Yankees. Our next series is against Tampa. Tampa has not looked good. I mean, they're again, they're 8-9, same thing as the Cardinals, a team under 500, but they're going to play us tough. But the Yankees should take 2 out of 3.
Absolutely.
And if they don't, it's going to be the talk of the town.
But
so,
listen, Tampa's been a fun and
dry schedule. I'm sick of it. Yeah. It's the same teams every year. You have to play these teams every year. It doesn't change. The Marlins have been bad for years. Like, yeah. What? Stop it. We have to play them. You have to. And if you lose 4 out of 5, I'm telling you, it's going to be the talk of the town.
Oh, of course. If
you beat them, it doesn't matter. There's no difference.
Yeah. I am dreading a Mets losing streak or losing a series or maybe two series in a row. I'm worried about what these buffoons are going to be running to the hills saying and crying.
The unwritten rule, and you know this, Mike, the unwritten rule is beat up on the bad teams, play 500 against the good teams. That's what you're supposed to do.
Pretty simple. I'm dreading the losing streak or the series losing streak or whatever it might be that's going to come because that's part of the game.
But hopefully it's against a good franchise to the point where you can't get ripped because it'll be understandable. Because that's the only time that when you lose a series to a good team, it's understandable. But God forbid you lose 2 out of 3 to a team that's not as good as you. It's the end of the world and you underperformed. You know, you got to make three or four trades to make up for it. Everybody starts panicking.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if anybody should be panicking, it's maybe the Boston Red Sox and their fans.
The Orioles? 6-10? Oh, they got the best offense. Okay, yeah. Well, their offense has produced 6 wins in 16 games. And their pitching, obviously, is not good enough.
No, and we've been saying that.
And the Yankees rolled these injuries. They're 10-7, and they're in first. So, and Juan Soto. Everyone's complaining about Juan Soto. He's hitting 240. Well, guess what? The Mets are in first place.
Yeah.
So, both New York teams have kind of weathered the storm a little bit. The Yankees with the injury bug. The Mets with Soto kind of acclimating. I think everything is fine. You could be a Baltimore Oriole fan right now and be looking at your team and saying, this is not how I expected to go the first 16 games.
Yeah. Or, you know, the Red Sox lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. I'm sure they're breaking out.
Exactly.
You know, it's hilarious. And then, you know, listen, Tanner Houck yesterday sold us in fantasy. I had him. I'm sure some of you did as well. He was a minus 31 for me, 11 earned runs. That's rough. That's a rough day. Guys, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the Mets? Everything that we've spoken about so far, not much left. We have a couple things that we're going to touch just before we go. Maybe just a final note, baseball news, Matt Shaw, our picks to win NL Rookie of the Year has been
not cool. Down to not trouble. Cool, man. Not cool.
He's been struggling though.
Yes. And you know what? This is the best time. This is the best time. Just get sent down now. Figure your stuff out. There's no pressure. The Cubs have actually been, you know, they're playing really good ball.
Yeah, they really are.
So they can afford to send them down and not have this kid get stressed out for whatever reason and keep pressing. So I think it was actually a smart move by the Cubs.
Yeah, like I said, he's been struggling a little bit, hasn't looked right. So let him go down for a couple of weeks, figure it out, and I'm sure he'll be right back up. Listen, he's one of the top-ranked prospects in baseball for a reason. His talent is there. You know, so I think it's just hopefully it's just a matter of figuring it out. It's not maybe a Jared Kelnick situation. You know, sorry. Actually, no, I'm not sorry because we traded them. So it is what it is. you know, I know Mets fans went nuts when we traded Kelnick for Cano and Edwin Diaz. So I'm listening at the time. I somewhat understand the outrage, but I digress.
I think that worked out for Mets fans.
I would say so. We got Edwin Diaz, and he's still our closer. Robinson Cano is out of baseball, and Jared Kelnick doesn't know what to do with himself. No disrespect. Maybe a little bit. I don't know. But, guys, moment you guys have been waiting for. Trivia question. New one. Fun one. You guys haven't noticed. We did a lot talking about Jackie Robinson. So, of course, this question, we're going to revolve around Jackie Robinson. I think it's only rightfully so. So obviously you guys know we've mentioned it. We've maybe built you up on some clues to this, and maybe you can get a somewhat of an idea of a time frame of when this may or may not have, when this may have happened. But if I could word it right, I would like you guys to tell me what year, and I'll give you one clue before I do that, because Bud Selig was the one that did this. So in what year did Bud Selig deem that everybody wearing a uniform, player or coach, wears the number 42 as their jersey number? What year did that happen? There has been a bonus amount of clues that have been happened with some of the things that we've spoken about regarding this particular topic. I want an exact year. And if you guys remember from the beginning of the episode, I know we've been yapping on for a little over an hour now. But listen, we want the comments in the podcast. We want them on the Instagram or the Twitter. We prefer it on the podcast because we're trying to spice this up a little bit. I promise you, there is a method to the madness. You just got to trust us. And we're trusting you to help us out here and show us that. Regardless, right or wrong, no embarrassment. Change your name on Instagram or Twitter if you have to. If you're that afraid to give us the wrong answer, it doesn't matter. It's not that big of a deal. It's almost like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where the points don't matter. But maybe they do. And that's all I'm going to say on that. Last note before we go, regarding Jackie Robinson, and it's just my little gripe with Major League Baseball. So obviously we know, most New Yorkers know, obviously Met fans know this. The Mets have the Jackie Robinson Rotunda, their main open gate. The Rotunda is named after Jackie Robinson. Why are the Mets playing baseball in Minnesota on Jackie Robinson Day?
That's actually a pretty good point, Mike, that you bring that up.
Help me understand. Listen, I understand the whole point that Wilpon created a rotunda for his favorite team, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and kind of ignored the Mets to an extent. But in a sense, I love the fact Jackie Robinson Rotunda, it was a perfect homage to a guy, and it's the only entrance in baseball, at least for a stadium, named after the guy. Why are the Mets on the road?
Yeah, I think they should probably be home, even though, like I said, Robinson had no ties to the Mets, obviously, but because you're the main entrance of your building is named after him, yeah, maybe the three-game set should be in New York.
He did it in New York. So, both New York teams should be home. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Just a little
side. I agree with you. That's a pretty good thing to bring up. I agree with you.
So, guys, again, one more time, for the people in the back that might have missed it, in what year did Bud Selig deem that all players in uniform and coaches wear the number 42? Give us the year. Comment section. We want to hear it. And again, as always, we love you guys. We appreciate you guys for listening for as long as we have on this, for our rants and our nonsense and calling out some of these journalists and doing what we're doing. Guys, as always, thanks for hanging out with us.